Kinsey Atwood, and I'm excited to bring you guys the first episode of Volume 3 of the Steven Universe podcast. So we're fresh out of Comic-Con, where Steven Universe creator Rebecca Sugar surprised everybody there in attendance with her announcement that Steven Universe the movie is coming to Cartoon Network. She also gave fans at the panel a look and an early teaser. So what better place to start a new volume of podcast episodes than with Rebecca and Ian Jones-Cordy to talk about Comic-Con, break down the huge events that unfolded in the last arc of Steven Universe animated episodes, and also just what it all means for the characters moving forward. Because in the recent episodes, we've seen all kinds of stuff. We saw the Pink Diamond reveal, a huge battle, the return of Lapis and Bismuth, and a lot from Ruby and Sapphire. So let me welcome Rebecca Sugar and Ian Jones-Cordy back to the podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here again.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, of course. First off, I wanted to talk about, you know, just like with this latest run of episodes, just basically starting with the reveal of Rose Quartz and Pink Diamond and all of that. It's obviously making some waves. So how does it feel to finally like tell this part of the story and see everybody's reactions?
It's a relief to get to talk about this out loud. It's a little unreal. It's been a lot of years of not being able to tell anyone.
It's one of those things that it was such an open secret for the crew. At least I remember when we were in the writing stages for the episodes, we would put a lot of Easter eggs in. You know, for us.
Yeah, it has everything to do with how everyone is relating to each other and how they feel about the past and what they want for the future. I mean, it was the sort of the spine of everything we were writing. So, and I would forget sometimes, like when I would see people react to episodes, I would forget that that was something that they didn't already know because it's like the missing piece that makes all of the things make sense.
Yeah. Right.
It's a logical thread that kind of goes through all of the stories, really.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, especially with Pearl's behavior, and her behavior really affects everyone around her too.
Yeah.
And Garnet's, but everyone, Amethyst's behavior, everybody, everybody's like quote unquote upbringing had to do with this person who had a very, very specific complex that we're still pretty much, we're not done unpacking.
And I think anytime we talked about Rose in the show, we always had it directly relate to this part of her story. And that was a lot of it was the missing piece. A lot of people could tell there was something weird going on with Rose and, you know, there were a lot of things we explained about her character and her powers. And, you know, it seemed she always seemed, I think, to people who, because nobody knew. And I think a lot of people were like, wow, Rose was so overpowered.
Right, she's really like, OP.
She's so OP. Like, how did she have all these powers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think also just, oh, I mean, I love writing for Rose because there's so much behind her. The person she wants to be, I mean, Rose is the person she wants to be so badly, and she's not always really good at it, which is something that really comes to light and We Need to Talk.
Yeah.
She's very ambitious about being this person that really cares about people. It's really difficult for her.
So does she, you think she just doesn't understand like empathy?
She's trying. She's always really trying.
But it's hard for somebody with that much power, you know, to get that. And I think she got the closest of, you know.
Well, and with, I think there's a big piece that people don't have yet.
Yes, that's
about
true.
Why she's like this, which I can't talk about yet.
Ooh. So then why was right now, like when you guys were planning out the arcs and stuff, why was this moment the time to reveal everything instead of, you know, I don't know, like season 3 or 4 or whatever?
We had to lay a lot of pipe to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, talking about how deep this sort of goes with the story, I mean, to just go back to sort of how it came together planning wise, when we were first planning the full scope of the show, it was Rebecca, Ben Levin, and Matt Burnett, and me. We were in a room, and we had a lot of the different pieces, and we started to put them together into a story. I remember one of the things I really wanted to talk about at the time is I'm a son of immigrants, and, you know, I think a lot of immigrant families have an experience of maybe someone leaving the family, going to a new country and reinventing themselves. And it's something that has definitely happened in my family, and I've seen happen in other families too. And it's not something that is specific to immigrants. I've even seen, you know, I've had friends who's, you know, oh, you know, my brother just, he went off and he started a new life and he tried to reinvent himself as a new person. And that was kind of something that we wanted to talk about, the idea of, you know, what happens when you try to escape that baggage by becoming a new person.
I remember coming up with a lot of this in the basement of our old place.
Yeah.
And there was definitely a lot of inspiration from your family, from Ian's family, because it was really interesting that your family's like extremely influential, but still their family.
Yeah.
And they have conflicts and connections that a family would have, mm-hmm. even though what they're doing was, you know, completely moving mountains in terms of what was happening in Ghana and at the time of independence. And it's just really fascinating to suddenly get to know you when we were sort of first getting to know each other and hear the story of how I just grounded in like real people that I was suddenly getting to know that would have so much mm-hmm. incredible influence. I just thought it was really fascinating. And I think ultimately we're kind of telling the story with this show of a family, and that can't necessarily be separated from this incredible legacy that can shape a whole society.
Right. Or even, no, that's not too far. I think it's, what Rebecca's alluding to is, my parents immigrated from Ghana. My grandmother was the designer of the Ghanaian flag.
Oh, wow.
My grandfather, you know, was an activist and a politician who was, you know, instrumental in a coup that was like gaining independence for Ghana, and sort of a lot of my family members were part of this and went on to become, you know, large figures in the country and do a lot of really developmental things. And I kind of came from this background of, you know, growing up, it was always these larger than life figures sort of, mm-hmm. you know, in my family. And I think when I was telling Rebecca about it, maybe to you, it seemed like, wow, those people are just like your, you know, your grandparents. And just like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, and they're just a family like anybody else. And, you mm-hmm. know, and I think sort of the story of the show is kind of like, you know, people might have a lot of power or a lot of responsibility or, you know, we're really have a big legacy. But at the end of the day, they're people and they have emotions and, you know, conflicts.
Yeah. You know, I never really thought about this, but when we were at the very beginning of the show, was the first time I went to Ghana with you. I think it was between the pilot and the show. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting, informative, and an experience I will never forget in terms of being
in a new place.
In a new place, and I had never been out of the country before. This feeling of suddenly.
But yeah, the story was kind of like, you know, a lot of times people have asked me like, oh, how do you feel about Steven? And I say, you know, for years I've been like, oh yeah, that show is very personal to me.
Right.
And people be like, oh, right, because, you know, you have your OC is Sapphire, so it's personal. And it's like, I couldn't tell them that, like, no, there's this kind of whole, you know, core to the story that, yeah.
Right. Your whole life story is a spoiler.
Exactly.
That's actually incredible. I never would have even thought about that. That's amazing.
But I think a lot of immigrants and children of immigrants, you know, can see themselves sort of, you know, in the story. And it's kind of why we, you know, like we put the pizza family in there. So
right. That's the most literal one. That's like Nanafua is literally your grandmother.
I remember like reading something about that, about Nanafua being based on your family, right?
Yeah.
So I figured that was just.
Yeah.
But no, it's instrumental in the whole show. That's amazing.
Yeah, not everything. That's the most one-to-one.
Yeah.
And Kiki and Jenny, who are really your cousins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. One of the other, this is, you know, obviously unrelated, but off the heels of that story, it's like the whole reveal of all of this happening when it finally, you know, the other shoe finally dropped and in a single pale rose, what was it like planning out how you were going to do that reveal since it had all of this history? And like, was it, I don't know, I feel like it would be really stressful trying to think of the right way to frame it.
Well, we had a really long time to come up with that story, right?
Yes,
right.
And it's a real amalgamation of a lot of different ideas that we had that had been floating around since the very beginning. Like the idea of Stephen going inside of Pearl's Pearl was maybe,
I think it was like the third story we wrote.
Yeah, it was one of the earliest stories ever.
Mm-hmm. We had a story idea where they're on a dangerous mission. Pearl stashes Stephen in her pearl, and then he would be stuck inside there, and he would be next to a row of spears. And,
right, which we did.
Which we did. There was going to be,
I forgot,
like,
that was part of the earliest.
There was going to be a funny thing where he like gets lost and Pearl's on the outside fighting a monster, and every time she throws a spear at the monster, the spears shoot up and disappear.
Right.
And then I think Stephen was going to get out by like grabbing onto one of the spears and then like getting shot out on it or something.
It's been so long. I'm glad you remember it. 6 years ago.
I know. And we ended up using a piece of that story for Monster Buddies, right?
Oh, that, well, Stephen gets bubbled away.
Where he gets bubbled. Mm. That we ended up kind of using a little bit of the setup of, oh, they're in a fight. They need to get Stephen out of there.
Right.
But going inside Pearl's Pearl was like one of our absolute earliest story ideas.
Yeah, there was a mix. There was another very early idea about Pearl being in her room, transforming into Rose in order to see her again, which evolved into sort of what happened.
Yep.
That we had the name.
Yes.
We actually had the name of the episode maybe, or close to it. Also probably around, that was season one.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah,
it's funny to sit on an episode name for, you know, five years. We had it that early because we always knew she had an issue with turning into her,
and that she was going to be a single pale rose,
but it changed a little bit what exactly that was. So yeah, it all kind of came together. One of the nice things about writing these later episodes and finally paying off a lot of what we set up is that we had explored so many different ways to tell each of these stories over all of these years that when it finally came time to do it, we just had this like trove of concepts to pull from.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we're finally going to do this thing, but we'll do it like this because that'll be the most efficient way to.
Yeah.
Like we were just like grabbing all this stuff that was on the cutting room floor from earlier and being like, well, we always wanted to do this. We're finally going to do this.
I think the thing that put it over the top, you know, when you guys were finally outlining the story, was the recursive Pearl concept. That would be the way that we go deeper and deeper.
Yeah, and I think we knew that she was repressing all of these things. Mm-hmm. So that's another question we ask ourselves very often, is sort of how do we show something instead of just talking about it?
Yeah.
You know, so visual metaphors, I think, are critical, especially in animation. You want to see it.
You don't want to just watch someone yak about it.
That's, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, was like with the repressed, like the amount of repressed memories and things. Do you know how early that idea dated back?
Oh my gosh. We knew she couldn't talk about it. I think it's very early that we started doing the reflex of her
covering her mouth. Yeah.
I think in the earliest iterations it was a little less literal. It was just, and this was something that I think is true for a lot of them, is just that the Crystal Gems were very excited to have Stephen because he had no preconceived notions of what their gem types should or shouldn't be. So early on, I think when we were writing the show, it was more that everyone was kind of presenting themselves to Stephen as they are and kind of enjoying the fact that he doesn't think that they mean anything in particular, which is why Pearl gets so upset when Peridot kind of exposes the fact that she's a Pearl.
Exactly.
Garnet is not defusing all the time because she likes that Stephen thinks of her as her own person. I think the fact that she could literally not talk about it was a little bit of an evolution, but it made sense also. So.
Yeah. In the episode where...
But we started that very early.
Yeah, in the episode where Pearl is excited to show Stephen Rose's Batcave, and Stephen already knows it, and you know...
Oh, yeah.
Batcave? I gotta ask. Batcave?
Oh, well,
Yeah.
Is that what they call? Is that what you guys call it internally?
Yes. Lion 2. Well,
Yeah.
It shows up before Lion 2.
No, it shows up in Lion 2. And then
they go back to it in Scabbard.
They go back to it in Rose's Scabbard.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean...
Right.
We haven't ever unpacked that.
Yes, that's true. We've never gotten to talk about it.
Yeah,
well, Rose is Batman. Some people have certainly figured it out.
Yeah, but it's very obvious.
Pearl is Alfred if Alfred were in love with Batman, but not Bruce Wayne. That's an important distinction.
That is an important distinction.
She loves Batman.
And basically, like, we were calling it a lot of different things because... So that cave is specifically kind of based off of the Bat Cave and also the cave in Mask of Zorro, where Zorro is training.
Right, where Anthony Hopkins trains Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, exactly. And what's it called? We used to also call it El Cabang.
What? I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
No.
You don't remember that?
Wait, the place, El Cabang?
No, not the place. I remember because it was like, you know, Quick Draw McGraw becomes El Cabang.
Yes.
And we were like, yeah, basically, you know.
Oh, we call it Rose El Cabang.
Yeah, we would call it like, you know, she had like this, these days where, and that's why in, I'm sorry, I'm going into a lot of topics, but that's why in The Answer, the way that she shows up and then disappears is so funny. Because she just shows up and she's like, bye. Because we were like, oh, she has this secret identity and she's just really excited about it. And then she's got to like, get out of there.
Yeah. She's not great at this whole thing.
No, it's really ridiculous.
Also, it's like cute that they're. Yeah. They're always together.
It's really obvious. It's so obvious. It would be like if Alfred showed up. On missions with Batman.
Right. I was like, I'm going to fight too.
Yeah. Exactly. Master Wayne.
Which would be great.
That would be amazing. There was so much. I mean, but yeah, but to go back to that cave, yeah, that was basically like her secret base of operations, which is literally why we put the giant penny in there.
Right, yeah.
Well, we had a lot of discussions about that.
Joe did that.
Yeah, Joe put it in, and we were like, look, the semiotics of putting a giant penny in a cave, you know, we got to keep it in. And I think a lot of people picked up on that, which is like what we were trying to say with that giant penny was this is a secret identity.
Mm.
And if you know... You know, if you kind of know those references.
I saw someone.
Yeah, people picked up on
almost
it.
Completely
mm-hmm.
nail it.
Yeah.
I think mostly because of the penny.
And, you know, there was a thing that very early on, Matt Burnett was always really big on, which is, you know, you don't want the audience to say, this came out of nowhere. You want them to say, I knew it the whole time.
Mm.
It's so much more fun. And so that's why we started putting all the clues in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Little breadcrumbs.
Yeah. I mean, and our whole deal with clues was, let's just be as obvious as possible because it's fun.
Right. Yeah. I think also it was just, we were thinking about it all the time. There's some things that are cropping up now.
Yeah.
Where people are saying, was this foreshadowing? Where it was just, we were working on all the stories at the same time. So stuff was kind of bleeding into each other.
And the
stories is...
Yeah, I mean, we would just write in things about Rose being pink, but just not say that fact. But we would say everything around it.
Yeah.
You know? And that was just how we wrote because that was the internal logic. And everybody knew. I mean, once you came on as part of the story team, that was like...
That's like the first thing we...
That was like the first thing we'd
fill
tell
everybody
people.
In on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting to see people pick up on the... stuff, like the little hints that were in stuff.
Yeah.
But to me, the exciting part is what it means for all of them as characters, like the way that they are.
Yep.
Like, and the way that Rose acted toward them. Like, there's a big, I think it's very subtle because it's never actually spoken. Mm-hmm. Like, especially like the relationship between Rose and Amethyst, because Amethyst is everything that Rose would have wanted to be. Like, a complete, no preconceived notion of anything that she's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
She can do anything she wants. And Rose to her is just like, oh my gosh, this person will grow up without any of this baggage that I had.
All of
and so she kept her completely in the dark about everything she was, you know, she has to find this stuff out from Peridot. You know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But I think that's like so true to a brand of hippie parenting where it's just like everything is open to you.
And it's kind of like that parenting like, when you don't tell your kids everything about who you used to be before you had them. And you hope that will be better for them. But in the long run, you know, for Amethyst, it sort of it did create a lot of issues. But
well, Rose is a parent. That's coming up. Rose is a parent figure. That's going to make a little more sense.
Yeah. And I think also, with the three main gems, you can really see the way that their personalities came from how they knew Rose, you know.
Yeah.
Pearl's neurotic nature is because she knew this deep thing. Garnet's straightforward, you know, ask no questions nature, leading stuff, being part of the fight is because she knew Rose as a fighter and a leader.
And because Rose, I think, trusted her and deferred to her on the regular.
Exactly.
You know, she really.
Yeah.
And Amethyst's sort of, you know, flexible nature kind of came from only knowing them way after. Like that conflict was over.
And being encouraged to be very fluid and to have really no restrictions whatsoever.
Yeah. And it basically all derives from their relationships with Rose and Pink. Yeah.
Yeah, but ultimately it's better to understand why.
Right. Okay. I think this is a good place to transition into talking about the Heart of the Crystal Gems arc. So we're going to get to Ruby and Sapphire and Bismuth's return with Rebecca Sugar and Ian Jones-Cordy coming up.
Been putting off buying new glasses? Zenni Optical offers a huge variety of high-quality, stylish frames and state-of-the-art optics, starting at just $6.95. We've got all the great frame styles you want, in materials like titanium, carbon fiber, and high-luster acetate. Plus, Zenni offers prescription glasses and sunglasses. So at this great price, you can build your eyewear wardrobe. You can get 10% off your entire order with code 360. So visit Zenni, Z-E-N-N-I, today at ZennyOptical.com and use code 360.
All right, so I'm back with Ian and Rebecca. And so we're going to keep talking about Heart of the Crystal Gems now. So first up, I wanted to talk about Garnet Split, which is obviously, you know, this has happened before, but this one was unique in that it was Sapphire who seemed more deeply hurt than Ruby. So can you talk about like that and why do you think that happened?
Well, Sapphire is extremely perceptive and can look into the future. I mean, she has powers of perception, but she trusted Rose so completely that she never did that. And to have her trust violated, I think, you know, she felt incredibly foolish. And I think Sapphire sees it as her responsibility in the relationship to be the one that's really aware, because Ruby is, I think, relatively myopic compared to her, just because she has perceptive powers.
Yeah.
To have allowed herself to be tricked by someone, I think, you know, she kind of sees her whole function. You know, there's one thing that Sapphire can do to protect them as a couple.
Yeah.
And that's to know what's happening.
And I also think there's another thing that's almost a little unspoken, which is, you know, because Sapphire is so perceptive and can see things in the future, it's almost like Rose took advantage of the blind spot in her powers because she can't look at the past. So it feels like so much more of a betrayal, because that's literally, you know, that's literally like she's got this perception, but that is literally like the blind spot in that power.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels like really underhanded.
So like she wouldn't be able to look at Rose's past, you mean?
No.
I mean, I don't think she can't look at the past. No.
She can't really look back.
She could have maybe looked into her, seen the things that she was going to do and infer things about her past, but she never did that.
Well, she was very ready to believe. And I think the thing that makes it feel so insidious is that this all became part of this whirlwind romance that she was having. And I think the idea that this person would use Sapphire's excitement over being in love with someone in order to avoid being found out.
Yes.
I think that's how she feels about it. It's like this idea that we should never question anything. You know, it seemed like something that was extremely romantic, but now in hindsight was just
Yeah, it's actually
Rose avoiding being caught by someone who really has the power to do that, but is sort of turning it into some. And Sapphire is not very emotional, but like the one thing she's really emotional about has become tied to this. I think she felt very.
I feel like also, you know, speaking from my Sapphire seat, I think if you're like the kind of person who you feel like you have everything under control, like Sapphire does, when something upsets that control, I think you're more likely to be frustrated at it, you know? Mm-hmm. Ruby, on the other hand, is a little more adaptable, because that's kind of like her whole purpose was to be this bodyguard that's ready for everything, that's doing all these crazy flips, you know? Mm-hmm. But like Sapphire's whole thing was like, I'm very in control. I know what's going to happen. You know, I know what my life is.
She's bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruby's not, I think, the idea that there was some big thing about a person that Ruby wouldn't know. I mean, I think that's almost always true.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's not, you know, freaking out about that. She's like, oh, someone didn't tell me something, so I didn't know that thing. There's no way that she would. She's not.
Because as a bodyguard, that was never her job to know,
right.
to know everything about what was going on. That was Sapphire's job.
Yeah.
And so to feel that lack of control, to feel that get taken away, I think it's a huge betrayal to Sapphire.
Yeah. Ruby's arc was really fun to see as well. And I wanted to ask about the episode The Question. Just like what your inspiration was for that in particular.
Oh.
That story.
But some of it's very literal. I actually, it was my 29th birthday. I actually went out to Joshua Tree with my brother. Well, this was the thing. This was this year. So, what year was that? 2016?
Yeah, maybe. 2015?
I think it was 2016.
Okay. I can't remember.
They had the OKKO game jam on Valentine's Day.
Yes.
And then they had the OKKO animation jam on my birthday.
Yeah.
And it felt like Cartoon Network was like conspiring to destroy our relationship. Because we didn't get to hang out with each other at all. So I had already planned to go out to Joshua Tree on my birthday.
Yeah, we were going to go.
But
and
you were
then
busy. And of course, I can appreciate having show stuff to do, so it was totally fine. But I went out with my brother, which was great, and me and Ian are very often joined at the hip, so
it was,
I was like, it'll be great. I'll have some time being alone with Steven.
In the desert.
In the desert, and I managed to get us completely lost in the desert, drive the car into a ditch in the middle of nowhere in the night, and I was not very together. But it was great. I mean, I think, you know, I needed some time to think. And Steven was a pillar of strength while I was flipping out because I drove the car into a ditch. So actually, the most literal thing is when she jumps off that cliff.
Yeah, when she jumps off that cliff. That was
It's actually the most true to life.
Because you guys basically drove
I
over
basically
a cliff.
I basically drove off over a cliff by accident.
Gosh.
But I think the thing that, again, like, you know, there's always these things that really bring the story together was really realizing that Ruby needed to be able to make the choice and that she needed to be able to, you know, feel things for herself.
Yeah.
But there's also
that out. What does it mean?
There's also like a period of, you know, reinvention that you can have when you, you know, kind of just take some time to yourself and really, you know, kind of think about what's important to you.
Yeah.
And I think it was important for us to show that Ruby could have that.
Yeah. So what was the significance then of them choosing to be together, you think?
It's too personal. Let's talk about something else.
Okay. Yeah.
But I would say, you know, the thing that's important there is just with the characters, with the specific characters of Ruby and Sapphire, you know, they really did choose to be together when we first saw them meet in The Answer. But then it's almost like their union got a little overshadowed by somebody else asking them to stay together.
Yeah, it was sort of circumstantial. And
I
think when you do get together when you're very young and then you change a lot as people while you're together.
Yeah. You sort of feel like, you know, oh, was the original like, you know,
sorry.
You grow together. And then you have to think about the original reasons, you know, why you're together. And, you know, that's really...
And that's the best part. You need to be able to keep changing as a person. It would be really scary to be locked in a situation. It's not a bad thing to have been several different people while you're together. I think that's... They have to reroute that in their minds as their strength and not their weakness.
And this was a real big sort of development for Ruby, because as a Ruby, you're never expected to be on your own.
Mm.
And to see Ruby actually be on her own for once and be like, oh, it's not so bad, you know?
Right.
You know, she got to basically enjoy being alone, but then also enjoy getting to make the decision, you know, to be with someone else. And I think that's something that, you know, we all should do, is sort of like, you know, look at your situation and think about the things that you're doing and take a step back and sort of be like, you know, this is my decision.
I was learning a lot at the time about differentiation, which is this idea that in a relationship with someone, you're sort of cultivating each other as different people, yourself as a different person, and not actually fusing together into a single entity. But the most important part of it is that you have to feel like what you're doing is constantly a mutual decision, like you're not being dragged along by some other person into something that you didn't agree to do. Mm-hmm. And if you're really attached to someone, it can start to feel like you're kind of along for the ride and you don't have any control, and
you're kind of losing that autonomy almost.
Yeah, you're not making the choice.
And it's scary because you can resent the person that you love for that lack of control over yourself. But the thing is that you can still do all of the exact same things as long as you are deciding to do those things, you know, with that person or for that person. And so what it really comes down to is building a solidity in yourself so that you know that you're doing what you want.
Yeah.
That's so much what this arc was about, is just having to take the time to decide individually and together what they both actually want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Okay, this is one other thing I wanted to ask about, aside from that whole Ruby arc, is about like Bismuth and how Rose's whole reveal changed Bismuth's, like, her perspective on everything that had happened.
This was another one where... when we were coming up with Bismuth,
it was all so based on this fact, and I was surprised at the time, because that was supposed to sort of crack everything open and show that Rose, there was something really strange about Rose's motivations,
and that Bismuth got a raw deal,
and that Bismuth was this tragedy swept up in something that suddenly becomes very confusing.
But the thing is, you know, as for her return, you know, that was like, it was always something that we had planned, that, you know, this character was going to return at a point when it made sense.
Right. Well, I mean, it was already strange to keep her in the bubble. But ultimately, what Steven has to find out is that everyone is so concerned with him, and that he's suddenly starting to be in a position where he's got to make a lot of these decisions for himself, because no one wants to put him in a situation where he's going to be scared.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so he kind of has to step up. There were so many things to unpack that were teed up in Bismuth. But I think the main thing, and this is something that we never really get to show, but I think is... it's hinted. It's even in the game.
Yeah, it's in the game, which is canon.
Yes, it's just canon.
To save the light.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bismuth loved Rose, really looked up to Rose.
Yeah.
And the thing to know about Rose is that Rose was saying awful things about the diamonds, especially Pink Diamond. 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Mm.
The reason that Bismuth considers herself to be like this ultimate crystal gem is because she was following Rose's vitriol to the letter than anybody else, which is why she got so confused, because she was like, hey, everything you're saying leads to this very, very logical conclusion, which is that we have to do this. I have to be like your ultimate champion in this. And then all of a sudden she gets struck down.
And I think, you know, Rose, because she was so hard on herself as Pink, because she had so much, you know, she wanted to run away from that life so bad. You know, she like overstated to Bismuth, you know, as much as she could about how horrible Pink was. And
it's something that this is very much in the margins, but it's all there, because when you hear Garnet tell the story, that's the story that Rose told.
Yeah.
And when Garnet, this is like in Your Mother and Mine, the story that Rose would tell was about this cowardly, horrible monster.
Yeah, this manipulative, cackling, right.
You know,
evil.
But Garnet isn't making that up. Garnet never saw that person. I mean, you see Pink, and she's like a dork. You know, this. Is that too much to say?
No. It's not too much to say. She's, you know. Yeah.
But this is what Rose was telling everyone, and I. This is very subtle, but I kind of want people to be aware that this is like a character that put herself in a situation where everyone around her was saying, destroy yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's mm-hmm. and she made that reality for herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. And tried to tried to leave that behind as much as possible. I'm trying not to color this with any right or wrong here. I'm just saying that this is what this character did.
This is what the character did. Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of times we would approach Bismuth as almost like a, we write her kind of like a soldier who kind of is trying to figure out that the war is over, who has been put through a lot and, you know, has this way of thinking that was given to her. And now she's at loose ends and it's, you know, it makes things tough for her.
Yeah. I mean, she's a champion for this cause and the cause and a person who betrayed her, which is complicated. Ultimately, Bismuth's thing, I think, is that she cares about her friends more than anyone.
Yeah.
You know, she cares about protecting and defending and fighting for these people that she loves, including Rose, which is why the whole thing was so confusing.
Yeah.
And now that she gets to, now that she is
and it was,
back, she can defend them.
And it was confusing for Steven, too, which is why it never seemed like the right time until there's more information.
Yeah, just to give the closure, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So San Diego Comic-Con was just last weekend, and Steven Universe had a lot going on. So coming up, Rebecca and Ian are going to share their Comic-Con experience with us, and we're going to talk about some big announcements that we made there. So, yeah, coming right up. All right, we're back with Ian and Rebecca. So Steven had a huge Comic-Con presence this year with, like, the booth and the Dove partnership and the huge Steven panel. So, like, what were the big highlights for you guys?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm...
The panel was great.
The panel was great. I think just finally getting to talk about the fact that we're working on the movie.
Yeah.
Because I've been working so hard on this thing. I'm really glad that people know that it's happening. Mm-hmm. That's a big relief. And to show legs, because that's a huge episode.
I'm so excited for people to learn more about the movie. I've mentioned it, but yeah, I finally get to rejoin the Crooniverse.
Came back and wrote and did some writing for it.
Nice. Yeah, I joined the story team, and you know, we hashed out this story. And I wish I could talk about it, but you know, we'll just have to wait.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I have no idea what to expect, but I mean, it seems like we're pulling out all the stops, so that's awesome. The Dove thing was really cool too. Just in general, how's that been for you guys?
I've been really excited to work with Chromosphere. I love this studio. Kevin, our original art director, runs Chromosphere, and then Jasmine, also one of our art directors, is there, and Osong, and just the artists involved are
incredible. All the shorts and the music video for the project.
I got to work with Elizabeth Ito. I got to work with Tiffany Ford. Yeah. I've been working with Lamar. Just the artists involved are great.
And then also getting to do basically like a who's who of the cast of the show, having them all come in and, you know, do something a little different has been great.
Yeah, that part's been really nice.
Mm-hmm. It was really fun seeing behind the scenes. Like it's all like a movie set or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that simple.
I love it.
Yeah. Actor AU.
Yes, I love it. Ian, I heard that you guys were in a panel that brought together a bunch of different creators from CN, and now you guys are doing a crossover episode?
Yes.
What is that?
So yeah, for my show OKKO, we're doing a huge crossover episode called Crossover Nexus, and one of the things that, you know, I love cartoon crossovers. I know you do too, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always really fun. And, you know, I'm in a unique position because I work on two of the current Cartoon Network shows. And so I think I ended up being like the perfect person to do a project like this. And Yeah, the whole idea is basically, there were all those fun Cartoon Network, in like the late 90s, early 2000s, used to do all these fun crossovers. Like there was like that CN Invaded crossover with all the alien stuff. There was that Grim Adventures of the Kids Next Door. And that was super fun. And like Ed, Edd n Eddy made a special appearance in that. And then there were all those like, we're going into Cartoon Network lore here, but like there used to be those Cartoon Network City bumps. Where all the characters were together in like a continuous world, and kind of like the idea is to sort of I think a lot of kids maybe who are watching Cartoon Network now haven't gotten to have that experience, and so I really just wanted to create that, and also I just really wanted to do a thing with Garnet in it. We had always thought like, oh, Garnet and KO would have a really cute chemistry, because
for sure
KO would remind Garnet of Ruby, so.
I hadn't even thought about that. I thought Garnet would just be like, I guess I've adopted another son,
I mean, essentially,
I think, KO is sort of between Steven and Ruby, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's, he's a mm-hmm. sweet little boy. So, and I think Garnet would want to be friends with him.
For sure. No question.
Yeah. Rebecca, what kind of notes do you give him when you're when he's implementing Garnet into the crossover?
Just little things she would say and mannerisms.
Yeah.
We made Garnet together. Mm-hmm. So
right.
There's like not a huge amount that I have to do to make her on show because she's ours.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. And when we were talking to the storyboard artist for the episode, a lot of them were like, oh, we love this character. We're not quite sure how to write her. And I was like, well, here's the thing. Garnet never asked questions. And then they were instantly like, oh, we get it. Like, it became really simple,
mm-hmm.
And it's really fun. I'm really excited for you all to see it. It's big and also small. It's a fun, like, little story. And it's also goofy in the way that those crossovers can be. Though I will say, if you're a fan of Garnet, we're going to be revealing a little canon thing about Garnet in the special that has never been said before.
Yeah, it's true.
Be excited for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you're doing that, do you get input from all the different show creators to make sure everybody's staying on the show?
Yeah, it was a huge collaboration. We had a massive pitch where we invited all the different show creators and a lot of the crews from all the different shows. And then we got feedback from all of them. At our first pitch, we made sure we invited people from the other teams and got notes on, things they would say, things they wouldn't say. And then the other really fun thing was we got all of the original voice actors from all of those shows. Mm. And they know the characters really well. So, there's a lot of really fun ad libs where, they say things that relate to their worlds, and, it was just really fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. There looks like there's a lot to look forward to in cartoons right now. So it's an exciting time.
I can't wait for you guys to see it. It's fun and it's goofy and it's exciting. So I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're like a deep Cartoon Network nerd, like I am.
That's awesome. All right. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
The Steven Universe podcast is produced by Stacey Pera, Charles Abadje, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, The Crooniverse, and Turner Studios in Atlanta. Please subscribe to the Steven Universe podcast at Apple Podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review while you're there. We love your feedback. Or you can always listen on Google or Amazon smart speakers. Just say, hey, Google, or hey, Alexa, play the Steven Universe podcast. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and I will see you next time.